everybody. I am Rabbi Dr. Jana De Benedetti, and Marcy Howard asked me to help moderate today's discussion about faith. In honor of Mother's Day and women everywhere, for the next hour, I will lead a discussion about women in our faiths who inspire us. The mission of About Faith is to gain peace and understanding of one another by having local faith leaders from a variety of faiths answer questions. We're not here to debate right or wrong. We're here to gain knowledge and understanding of one another through respectful conversations with faith leaders about our own journeys about faith. I'd like to present our panel today. As I mentioned, I am Rabbi Dr. Jana De Benedetti from B'nai Zion Congregation in Shreveport. I am joined by Ashish Modi from the Sadhu Vaswani Hindu Cultural Center and Hindu Temple, and Reverend Sioni Tuta from the First United Methodist Church of Bossier City, and Father Jason Fosterum from the Holy Nativity of the Lord Orthodox Church in Shreveport. It is truly an honor and a pleasure to speak with you all today. Let us begin our discussion about women who have influenced us in our faith by hearing from our friend Ashish Modi from the Hindu Cultural Center.
Well, I find it quite appropriate that, as you mentioned, that we are talking about the contributions of women in our respective faith, especially on Mother's Day. And I agree with you when you say that it's a tribute to all the mothers and all the women around the world for their significant contribution and dedication to humanity. But today I want to talk about a significant contribution in my Hindu philosophy made by a couple of strong women, and they're also called mothers by their followers. And one such mother is also known, is a French-born spiritual person who dedicated her life in advancing philosophy of Sri Aurobindo, who was an Indian philosopher, Indian mystic, and also spiritual master in Pondicherry, India. Her name is Mira Alfassa, M-I-R-R-A-A-L-F-A-S-S-A. She's also known as Mother by hundreds and thousands of her followers. She was born in Paris, France in 1878. She came to India on a spiritual quest in 1914. And she died in 1973 at the age of 95. She worked exclusively with our spiritual master, Sri Aurobindo, to promote the vision of unity among all different creeds and religions. She promoted her basic philosophy of integral education, where she believed that every child is a growing soul and one must help child to bring out the best, most powerful, most innate, and child should be able to live in his own nature because every experience becomes a learning tool for the child and his growth. She also emphasized that education's aim is not just studying about science and mathematics, but to build a power of human mind and spirits. Education should create dynamic citizens so that we are able to meet the needs of modern complex life. She especially promoted the philosophy of Sri Aurobindo in which he suggested a theory of divine life. And what is divine life? And how do you get divine life? And so for that, one must cultivate divine virtues, selflessness, straightforwardness, courage, serenity, generosity, mercy, and also self-restraint. And later on, she established an institution called Sri Aurobindo Ashram. They is also known as Aurobindo Ashram in 1926. She wrote many books promoting the philosophy. Her notable works include Prayers and Meditations, Words of Long Ago. In 1968, she took a giant step in establishing a village called Auroville, A-U-R-O-V-I-L-L-E, which is set on almost 2,200 plus acres and accommodates about 50,000 plus of followers. And the main objective of Auroville is the vision of unity among all different humans and nationalities and religions. It is experimental township in the state of Tamil Nadu, India. It's a town where men and women of all countries are able to live in peace and harmony above all the creeds, all politics, and all nationality. The main purpose of the village is to realize human unity. What a thought, what a message, what a contribution to humanity to bring all the people of the world together. No wonder she is regarded as a mother by thousands of her followers. This is what she said. She said, what you're able to do today, what you are not able to do today, you will be able to accomplish tomorrow. Perseverance is the key, and you shall conquer. She was very optimistic. She knew the progression of human souls, and she worked exclusively hard to bring the people of different faith, different nationalities, and especially for children's upbringing. She established many schools, and so I think it's so important that we dedicate today's on her. The second person I want to talk about is also known as Mother, and she's Mother of all the world. She was also a foreigner, but she came to India in 1929. She was born in 1910, and obviously by now people will guess who I'm talking about. Her name is Mother Teresa. And she dedicated her life in the service of poor souls of India. She worked with leprosy-ridden people of India. Even though she is of Catholic faith, she integrated her life very much so that she's also regarded as a Mother Teresa. And she has done wonderful things, not just in India, but all over the world. She started as a teacher. Later on, she became a principal of St. Mary School in Calcutta. But when she contracted tuberculosis, she was traveling to Darjeeling. And in the train, she received something called internal call, or call within a call. And when she got a message from Jesus saying that her ultimate objective is to serve the poor people and help poor people of India, and that's where she dedicated her life in serving the poor people of India. She worked exclusively in slums. She treated people with leprosy and many diseases who at one point were not taken care of by other people. And we owe her service, and we must recognize both of the mothers on this coming Mother's Day. She won the Nobel Prize. She died in 1997. Later on, 9 years after that, she was recognized as a Saint Teresa of Calcutta by Pope Francis. So here are the two wonderful woman I want to talk about. Obviously, there are many in our faith as well. Traditionally, the role of women in our Indian culture was to bring the family together and participate and encourage everyone in religious activities. So there are still many more we can talk about, but such as we have Anna, who is also known as Hugging Saint, or we have Sharda Devi, who's also known as Holy Mother, and many others who are significantly contributed to advocate the philosophy of India and Hindu culture.
I appreciate that for many, many reasons, the women that you chose. Can I first say that Mother Teresa would be someone who would be helping right now, because we are all devastated and praying for India and the number of people who are dying. I read something that 120 people every hour are dying of COVID Correct. In India right now. And it is exactly the kind of task that Mother Teresa would have led us on in the fight to be helping. And so it's appropriate to think about her as a mother for India and for the world right now. So I appreciate that. You had said something in a conversation we had earlier that I don't know how many people understand about the soul, I'm going to say, of Hinduism, but that how many gods are female gods in Hinduism?
Well, that's a very good question. And if you look at the Hindu's deity, many prominent deities are female deities. For instance, Lakshmi. We do Lakshmi Puja, which is supposed to bring you wealth. We do Saraswati Puja, which is the goddess of education. Kali Puja is the goddess of justice. Parvati, there are so many you can go by. So yes, Hindu culture, Hindu philosophy is full of all these wonderful figures who are contributing and who are constantly regarded as the goddesses and gods. So yes, there are a lot of examples.
And I appreciate that. And I have a feeling that we know that this is a topic that we can't pick one or two people or even just one or two deities to talk about. I think that this is something that this group is going to want to pursue much more in the future. I appreciate that we get to talk about it for at least a moment on Mother's Day. But that was wonderful. Sioni, it looks like you are losing your light. That is impossible for me to believe because the light is within you and shines from you. Tell us something about what you wanted to share about women.
I think it's unavoidable in my background not to talk about Mary, the mother of Jesus. From our perspective, root of our journey with this faith, it's the beginning, is from the motherhood as far as Jesus personalized, humanized Jesus to the point of the extraordinary. You know, the whole idea, every time that I talk about the whole idea of Mary talking to Joseph, I am being impregnated by the Holy Spirit. Yeah, right. Who is that? What does the Holy Spirit look like? What does he got that I don't have? I mean, the humanity, you know. So in my faith, it's at least for me, it's just right to think about that because it ties us to the humanity of this triune God, you know, whatever that doctrine will mean to people, but bring the what happened up there down here, in a sense, and so the process by which every mother go through the conceiving, the conception of that, the process of caring with wishes and dreams, and all the way to the morning of death. And if from the beginning of this story, as a mom, you know that your son, the son that you just cut from the core of who you are, will be, it's a sacrifice. It's hard to believe for anybody who have ever loved something or someone, the idea that you part way with that something or someone, it's never an easy thing. And so for this young mom who had to face the possibility, the whole story about this young lady of theologian, smart people say, you know, 13, 14, 15 years of age. I mean, that is drama. That is a huge psychological thing. So just to think for a young lady to go through that. As of the day, in our legal system, somebody have to go to jail for that. But here it is. The divine invading is where heaven touches earth in a profound way. That is just, you just cannot explain. And yet humanize this faith that we can connect in some level of psychological and emotional and the process of growth And then a funny story about this mother. At some point in time, they lost Jesus. They go to a festival in the city, and then they had to look for their child. I mean, is child abuse in our legal system today?
Every mother's worst nightmare is that
and
it's literally a nightmare that you go to sleep and you wake up and you're like, you're in a sweat because you left the baby at Walmart or you left the baby.
Yes, it is. I mean, this child is, when I talk about this, there is one sense of making light of the fact. I mean, this child was not raised by a Southern mother, but that's humanize this whole relationship with this divine. And so Mary, I mean, just the idea that you have been handpicked by the divine. You are the destination, you are the bridge, you are the vehicle. I mean, I just cannot imagine the responsibility to be told you are highly favored. Well, I don't know, by a creature that I had never seen before. I mean, the whole idea for a mother to be announced in our culture today, the announcements that I am expecting, it is, the Twitter feed is gone, the Facebook is gone. And then I always wonder, nowadays, the question that I have when people make announcements, I say, now, I want to be sure this is official. And people will say, yes. I say, is this Facebook official?
Right.
Because if it is announced on Facebook, it is absolutely certifiably official. There is a rubber stamp on that because the whole world knows about it.
And I appreciate that you're making this be something that people can relate to, because the way you're telling this story, I like to always say, who are you in this story? And the way you're telling this story, you're making Mary be very relatable in some ways. You're putting her, and that's a very helpful thing. And we appreciate
it. Yeah. And the other mother in here is, it just showed my bias. In this, my bias is Susanna Wesley. Hmm. I mean, in the same vein of, you know, you have this child that have picked this road and this path, and they are blazing a trail that never been really before. You know, you've been told that officially the biblical narrative cannot be preached outside the pulpit, because God have limitation on where God can be experienced. It have to be inside the box. And here is John going outside and standing around the street. And I mean, you have poor people across the street from the church. And here is, I've always, there is a scene in the story about Susanna saying to the children, whenever you see mom have the apron over her head, it is time out for mom. That means mom, that means do not bother mom, because mom is in prayer time. And that scene in itself of how Susanna laid down some guardrail of discipline, whereby John's and Charles learn how significant it is to have a process, to have discipline, and to walk faithfully with that. And I just know from my personal experience how hard it is. My father retired from the ministry, and at one point in time, I said to my dad, I'm thinking of moving home to join the home crowd in the service. And he looked at me. Well, let me back up. When I announced I'm going into the ministry, it's been a long story of my journey. I talked to my mom and dad, were here for my graduation from college, and my dad said to me, "And someday I hope you will carry on after me," and then. Thinking, he say, you know, if you answer this call, I hope someday you come home. And my mother does not say anything. My mom is one of those saints, just silently pray in the background and work. And I was shocked. My mom just did not miss a beat and simply say, you know, the God that they serve here is the same God that is back in the island. And that was the end of the story. I was just let go. I was just free to answer this call this way. And I'm thinking of Charles and John. They have watched their parents. And so I said to my dad at some point in time, in the last 10 years, I'm thinking of coming home. And he said, why would you do that? And I say, I'm thinking that I can help. And my dad say, no. And I say, why? He say, because you will bring me so much pain. Because he's an insider now. He know the political, all the structural stuff that will bring him pain in it. And I wonder about Susanna watching her children go through this whole deal. Is a revolution of a whole process that has been there for ages. And the pain that parents, especially mom, and to watch their children suffer through this. The only added thing that I will put in here is it's a personal thing. It's not a biblical mother in the faith. Our third king in Tonga is a female. So, we are trying to get women here to some status of authority figure. I am proud to say, come on, catch up with the island people. You know, we have a ruler of this country. Our third king was a female because she was the only child. And so I'll just tell you the story. When the inauguration of the queen, Elizabeth, our king went to England for that, and so when they left the chapel after the event, the history documented that he started to rain a little bit, and then all the dignitaries, drivers stopped, raised the cover for all the vehicle that they go, and they stopped. And the king of Tonga, which is this female, this mom, say to the folks, no, don't do that. These people stand on the street are my people. If they are wet, I will be wet. If they are cold, I will be the cold. A heart of a mother who truly understand their people. Proud of the kind of radicalness that mom have. It humanized everything in our faith. You know, not all women in my faith are good women. There are, but that is the lineage of Jesus.
So they are
dysfunctional. They are dysfunctional people. And so it gave me some safe place just to be crazy. So I think that's enough of my behalf.
And the reality of humanity. And that's, I appreciate that. Because that's the heart of humanity too. But Father Jason, I think that you have some connections to this and some different versions of this.
Sure, I was gonna say, Rabbi, since I'm gonna follow Pastor Sione in the Christian tradition, would you like to speak to the Jewish tradition to break it up, or do you want me to just follow Pastor Sione?
You are very welcome to continue, that's fine. Please do.
I think Pastor Sione and I were probably racing to get to Mary first, and he beat me to her.
That was my fault. Sorry about that.
I would just echo a lot of the same things that Pastor Sione said. In the Orthodox tradition, there is a book called The Proto-Gospel of James. It's second, third century, and it talks a little bit more about the history of Mary. Her parents being Joachim and Anna, and how they were barren and prayed to God to give them a child. And they promised that they did, the child would be dedicated to him. And she gave birth to Mary, and Mary was dedicated to the temple in the Orthodox tradition following the recollection of these texts as well, but she entered the temple around the age of three, and along with other, you know, temple virgins that lived there. And when she became a young woman, she was no longer in the temple and the temple area especially. And so the story kind of continues from there, and that connects us to kind of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, where the Archangel Gabriel in the Orthodox tradition, she'd encountered him before. And then we see it pick up in the story that's recorded in the Gospel of Luke, like I was saying, and Pastor Sione kind of takes it from there and really did a good job explaining her place in the Christian tradition. So I won't say more than Pastor said. I think between the both of us, really what he said kind of covers Mary as a very important figure in the Christian tradition for sure. You know, then there was, I was going to kind of go from a timeline. I've got 2,000 years to pick a few people from. Right? So, not anything to do. So being that it is Mother's Day coming up, and my wife is the
Mother's Day today.
Mother's Day every day. Let's do that.
That's right.
And my wife is a mother of our six daughters. So I chose her patron saint, St. Catherine of Alexandria, who lived between 287 and 305 during the reign of Maximinus. This was before the Edict of Milan in 313 that brought somewhat of a peace within the Roman Empire at that time in regards to Christians. It wasn't the religion of the Roman Empire, but it became an accepted religion in the Roman Empire. So the persecution of Christians ceased around that time. But St. Catherine lived a little bit before this, and she was known for many things. One, she was extremely beautiful physically.
Yeah.
And so that caught the eye of the emperor, not a good thing. She was pretty much smarter than everybody else around her, not good at that time. And this is during the days where there was a strong influence of Hellenism and Greek philosophy through Alexander the Great in that area. During that period of time of Alexander the Great as well. And Rabbi, I know you know the story where the high priest goes out and meets Alexander. And the next year, all the children are named Alexander, a form of Alexander in honor of him. But also the philosophy and Hellenism, you know, kind of took over the world in that Middle East at that time. So she was very gifted in philosophy and rhetoric. So the emperor really trying to swoo her and kind of bring her over, had her debate about 50 of these great philosophers. And when she was done, many of them converted to the Christian faith. So that didn't go over very well. They tried to martyr her according to tradition on a wheel. So quite often when you see her picture, she's got this large wheel with spikes on it. But there was an angelic encounter there where the wheel was destroyed. And ultimately she continued to proclaim the Christian tradition to those around her in that area. She's from Alexandria. And ultimately, she was beheaded along with many other people. And so for us, she is a wonderful saint that we quite often see universities named after. A lot of librarians kind of have her as a patroness. So she was one that I would pick to talk about. The other, a little bit later, was the Holy Empress Theophano, who was the wife of Emperor Leo VI, the Wise, between 886 and 911. She and her husband were both falsely accused at one time of trying to assassinate her father, who was Emperor Basil the Macedonian. But when she got out of prison, she dedicated her life to prayer and to fasting and to working out this grace that was within her, what we would say for her salvation, her transformation, and what we would say is Christ-likeness. And she became a mother figure to those she ruled and served over, taking care of the poor, the widows, and the orphans. And the thing about her story that was so fascinating to me was that her husband loved and respected her so much. He wanted to build a church to her in her honor, but she wouldn't let him do it. So what he did is he moved the Feast of All Saints to the first weekend after Pentecost, because he knew that there was no doubt in his mind that one day that feast day would include her. And it's a beautiful story of how much he admired and respected his wife. And so whenever that feast is honored and celebrated, her name day, we would say, is on that day as well. We remember her. Lastly, and this kind of ties a little bit to what Pastor Sione was saying as well, at least, and I think it's timely for this era that we're living in, with so much attention being given to the royal family. St. Elizabeth, the new martyr, the Grand Duchess, as we call her, lived between 1864 and 1918. And this was during the time of the Bolshevik revolutions in Russia. She was the granddaughter of Queen Victoria. But as was during those times, you know, quite often marriages were situated for many reasons, right? To maintain peace, to bring countries together, whatever it may be. But her story with the Grand Duke Sergei of Russia is a love story as well. Unfortunately, her husband was assassinated. So after that, she dedicated her life to the founding of a convent. And she was known of, you know, kind of like a lot like Mother Teresa, taking care of the poor, the needy, the broken. And her sister, Alexandra, was the last empress of Russia of the Romanov family. So there's a lot of ties there as well. But as many of these stories go, in 1918, as the Bolsheviks began to take over more of Russia and communism began to prevail, she, along with some others, one being St. Barbara, who would not leave her side, were brought outside to an old mine shaft, and the Grand Duchess was thrown into this mine shaft along with other people, and hand grenades were thrown into the mine shaft and it exploded. But after that, for a little while, they could be heard singing church songs, and her last act on this earth was bandaging those that were dying in the mine shaft itself, and then she reposed as well. So we remember her, the Grand Duchess, St. Elizabeth, the new martyr, and she's a very, very special person in recent history that we can look to that set a great example for love, caring for the poor, taking care of the needy, being a mother figure to those she encountered. So those are the three I had picked out. I had to pull one out real quick when Pastor Sione cut me off with Mary, Holy Emperor Theophano. So I think that covers the ones I would talk about.
I apologize for the Jason, because I was thinking about that. But I thought, originally I thought I was going to talk about Ruth. That's who I had in mind.
Yeah.
But then I thought, okay, I'll just cut in the middle of the history.
It's so difficult to choose.
About Wesley's the mother.
Oh, and Susanna.
What a wonderful, wonderful story that she has. And I've actually read about her in the past as well. Yeah.
Well, listening to all these examples that we are talking about, it clearly shows how important it is to balance the prayerful and contemplative life with the practical one of loving in action. And all these examples that we are giving here, they were not just very religious and spiritual figures, but they're also very humane, and they contributed a lot to humanity and serve the poor people, and that's needy people. I think that's where the true love of scripture is, to help the needy people, help them recover, and child welfare and all of the stuff. And examples that we are given here today, I think they fit wonderfully, not just to women's world, but to mother's world. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And the connection about taking care of the world and the examples that they set for everyone. So I'm glad that actually you all had connections between different people, different times. I'm very impressed though how you got to choose. It's very hard for me to choose. I wanted to start with biblical ones, and obviously there's Chava, who is considered the mother of all, you know, the mother of all life, Eve, and I wanted to talk about maybe, and she sometimes gets a bad rap, so one day I'd love to talk about her as having a good rap, you know, a good reputation. And then there's the matriarchs, and they all had a hand in, if it weren't for them, we wouldn't be here together right now as Abrahamic faiths, for some of them and most of the people I think listening potentially. I had other examples as well though. There's one, so some of the women who I've had as examples for me, one is a woman who's mentioned in the Talmud, which is the commentary on the Torah, the oral law. She lived around the year 200, around that time. She was in the second century. Her name was Bruria, and she was someone who has always inspired me. She is quoted a few times, and it was in researching this that I realized that some of her stories didn't have great reputations, and I think we're hearing that about some of these other women as also now, which makes me sad, because the stories that I heard were wonderful and they're inspiring. There were two brief stories about Bruria that I loved. One was that her husband would go to prayer, and when he came home from going to services, he was hearing over and over during the course of some weeks that there were some neighbors, some people, they didn't know who were going into people's houses and they were stealing things. And fortunately, up until this point, no one was hurt, but it seemed to be escalating. And one day, there were people in the house, and the husband came home and he was furious. And he said, "This is terrible. And we should pray that these men come to justice and that someone hurts them instead." And she said that that's not the best thing to do. We shouldn't be praying that the sinners die, but we should be praying that they turn from their evil ways and that they become good again and that they learn that what they're doing is wrong. I always loved that as an example of how to influence people, how to, it's not about the people weren't bad. It was their choices that were bad. And I loved how she was an influence for that. And then there was, as a mother, there was this very sad story that she is famous for, that one day when the husband was out on the Sabbath praying at worship services, they had two sons and the sons died. There was a horrible illness that was going around and both sons died. And he didn't know that. And he comes home and he wants to greet the sons, and she makes up some excuse and she feeds him this festive meal for the Sabbath. And he asks again, where are the boys? And she made up another excuse and she allows him to have all of the peace and holiness of the Sabbath. And when the Sabbath is over, she says, "You know, by the way, an interesting thing happened that a while ago, someone came and they dropped off something that they asked me to hold for them, you know, in our house. And we agreed that we would, but he came back and he asked for them back for, no, he asked for this back, the thing that he asked us to hold. And wouldn't you say that we probably should return it?" And he said, "Yes, of course." She said, "Well," and she brings him up to the sons, and he finds that the sons had died. And she said, "God gave and God has taken away. Blessed be God." And so he realized that she was wise about this, that it was that they were a gift from God. And it's one of the most tragic ways. And it's often on Mother's Day, we get to be joyful and celebrate. This year has been a year of tragedy, and sometimes we are sad, whether it's losing our mothers or mothers who lose children. And I felt that was another way to remember that. And I had one other person that I wanted to, some of you went to more modern. So there are many women in the Jewish tradition who I find to be inspiring. One of the women who I found to be inspiring who passed away this year was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Because one of the things, and you talked about different ways in the women that you mentioned, who their whole lives were dedicated toward pursuing the values of that were important, whether it was education or whether it was healing or whether it was trying to help people in poverty. And she was always pursuing justice always her whole life. She said, she was quoted as saying, "I am a judge born, raised, and proud of being a Jew." She said, "The demand for justice runs through the entirety of Jewish tradition." She said, "I hope in my years on the bench of the Supreme Court of the United States, I will have the strength and courage to remain constant in the service of that demand." And then she had another quote that I liked, which was just kind of sweet, that talks about what it was to be a mother and a daughter, where she said, "What is the difference between being a bookkeeper in New York's garment district and a Supreme Court justice?" She said, "The difference was one generation." And it inspires us always to pursue the values of our backgrounds, of our faiths, and the fact that our faiths and our backgrounds all share similar kinds of values. Even when there are differences, I think that it's important that we also share humanity and justice and trying to help the world to be a better place. So appreciate you all very much. I hope that you're having a wonderful Mother's Day too.
Yes. And again, you know, the role of woman is just not as a mother. I mean, they play so many different roles, and especially in modern life, we have the educators, they are family caretakers, they take care of parents, they take care of kids. On the top, they also take care of the patients or relatives, and they also continue with the spiritual path. I mean, they are so important in terms of certain religious practices that we do in the family. Without them, it's practically impossible. I mean, I know my family, where my wife is very much dedicated to certain things that would not be done otherwise.
In Jewish tradition,
so it is a tribute to all the women.
In Jewish tradition, we're taught that women are more naturally spiritual and men are more naturally physical. And I think that in our next session, we'll talk about men as well, men that inspire us and ways that helps. And I suspect some of it will be similar, that the value system and how they're being taught or the progress that they make in the world. But I think that that's true. I think that, which is why I started to think about the women like the matriarchs in the scriptures, because even though the lineage seems to follow from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, we know that it was the women who were teaching the values also, that right. is very, very right. important, and that you often have it as that way. So I appreciate that you say that too. This hour, with discussions about how women have inspired us about faith, has been inspiring, and I have learned many things. I hope you have too. Obviously, this discussion will need to be continued in future About Faith programs, but also with each other when we're not recording. I'd like to hear more about these women and others who have inspired our faith leaders and you, our listeners, who have joined us during this discussion. You have been listening to About Faith on Red River Radio. I hope you enjoyed getting to know our local faith leaders on our panel today. If you have any questions that you would like to ask our panel to have us address, please email us at redriverradiomail@gmail.com. redriverradiomail@gmail.com. Please be sure to tune in next week at 1 p.m. for Illuminations, and don't forget to tune in again in 2 weeks for conversations with our faith leaders here about faith. On behalf of Marcy Howard, I again wish you a happy Mother's Day.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Red River Radio, our community advisory board, or LSU.